Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network's main podcast, the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Here tonight, we're going to be looking at one of the golden classic films. When it comes to adaptations, this is one you either love or you hate, and it's certainly one based on a video game which we all love. That is, of course, Super Mario Brothers, and this is, of course, the classic live-action film done back in 1993, and tonight we're going to be looking at why it is superior to the new one that's out now. That's right, here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
I sit here waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that movie on the Lethal Mullet.
G'day mate, how you going? This here is Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet here on, of course, Lethal Mullet Podcast here, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia for tonight's episode, which is a look at the Super Mario Brothers film back from 1993. Of course, Dennis Hopper in there as King Koopa and many others, and an amazing cast, actually, which we're going to be talking about very, very soon here. And of course, what about the franchise itself? Super Mario Brothers. We've all played it. We've all had a Nintendo at one stage of our lives, right? So we're going to be talking about that, and we're going to be talking about the many different versions of Mario that have been out there, and why this live action, you know what? It was a bit of a slice of the 90s, wasn't it, folks? It was something a little bit different. Something, you know, we were really looking at was since, of course, Batman. It was comic book and, of course, computer game adaptations at the time were off the scales. Of course, things would lead into things like Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, and many others when it came to the games. Even, you know, adaptations that you probably wouldn't think would get made got made back then. So 1993, what a year. And of course, one of the more interesting ones to take into live action. I mean, this new edition that's come out with Chris Pratt as Mario, I'm not a big fan of not only the casting issue there of him being Mario, yeah, it is what it is, but to me, you know, half the thing was, you know, you got Bob Hoskins as Mario. Not only does he look like it, but he really got into the character. Now, from all reports, Bob didn't like the film, didn't like the role. Thought it was a bit of a low point of his career, but he is fantastic in the role, along with, of course, Leguizamo, as, of course, his brother in this. Luigi is fantastic. Dennis Hopper as King Koopa and Samantha Mathis in this as well. Many others. We're going to get into that tonight here on the show. So kick back, relax, enjoy as we look at one of the classic adaptations that you either love or you hate it.
So this is Jonathan Lake from Aberdeen, and I got to tell you something. I've been listening to this here show, and a Scottish cover Dog Soldiers, like, because it's just one of those films you got to cover here, right? Great you covered Split Second, yeah? It's a great Wooka Howe film.
You know, every time I hear that podcast, all I can say is it's great to hear all about Mad Max and all that great stuff down under.
G'day mate, how you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host Mark Newbold into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe, all here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com, or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, folks, you've all asked my opinion, apparently, about what I think about this Star Wars news from, of course, the Star Wars celebration happening over in the UK to our pals over there in the UK. Hello, how are you doing? You enjoying Star Wars? I hope you are. Hello, hello, hello. Yes.
Let me just say this. When somebody announces something and doesn't deliver said something that they announced, one would kind of think that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a certain nursery rhyme, certain fairy tale, you know, the boy who cried wolf. Let's just say that's my current thoughts on Lucasfilm. They do say a lot, and yet they don't deliver, right? Now, that could be to do with the management. Actually, it's probably got a lot to do with the management at Lucasfilm. Yes, you at Lucasfilm haven't delivered. That's the business. You've got to deliver the goods, right? They've delivered some great stuff, though. Having said that, you know, Mandalorian's been spectacular, and even more so Andor. Andor's been off the charts. It's a great, well-made TV show. So they can do it, right? But we haven't had a movie since... Was it 2017, 2018, wherever it was, 2019, that has hit the cinemas, right? So when it gets down to where we're heading with these things, you know, they've announced a number of movies and none of it's come to pass. They've announced a trilogy of movies from Mr. Rian Johnson and none of it came to pass. They announced three new projects which they're currently working on. Now, we did see some trailers. We saw a Skeleton Crew trailer with... which actually looks pretty damn interesting, I've got to say. But Jude Law, who I actually think is a great actor. If you haven't seen Repo Man is fantastic with him and Forrest Whitaker. It's all about, of course, organ harvesting, if you like, whatever you want to call it. Putting these new organs in people that are on their way to, you know, fatal death, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, when they can't pay for said organs, they go and have to repossess them. It's quite a good, if you're into Kylie, Eskrima martial arts, going to get to see Forrest Whitaker do those exact martial arts too in this. And he's, again, he's a martial artist, folks. You know, let's not beat around the bush. He's actually a Kenpo stylist and does some Filipino arts as well. So hats off to a fantastic martial artist and actor. He delivers. Now, Lucasfilm, though, when it comes down to these projects, you know, they, again, said a lot, announced a lot, and then they put it on the shelf. Right, and this seems to be a running gag for the last couple of years, you know, whether it's coming from, I don't know, you know, where it comes to passes, that somebody has to be responsible for all this. And at the end of the day, they've had a change in management at Disney. Kathleen Kennedy's still in charge over there. That was something that George put in. Dave Filoni, and there's said to have been apparently a falling out between Filoni and Favreau against Kennedy, right? About the time of the latest season of Mandalorian was coming to pass. Alright, so we know that. But we know this much. They've announced these three new films, and to be honest, I think they're quite exciting ideas. Now, they're ideas, they're announcements. That's it. That's all they are so far. So we've got one James Mangold is doing. This is based 25,000 years before any of the movies, based on basically what was done in Dark Horse Comics, which was, of course, Dawn of the Jedi. This was a very interesting comic. It was certainly an interesting thing to look at, Tython and many of the other planets, before the Jedi were anything. And, of course, back in this time, the Jedi were called the Jedi. The light side users, dark side, whatever you want to call it, but it was kind of in a flux, and it was a balance back then. The Ashlar and the Bogan. And, you know, that was a really interesting story. It even showed how they found Force users and stuff like that too. So that has caught my interest. I think that's going to be interesting. And Mangold is a fantastic director. If you've seen his Wolverine movies he's done, best one I personally think that comes to pass that I love of his work is, of course, 310 to Yuma. I think he did a fantastic job with Christian Bale and Russell Crowe in that one. And, of course, the cast. It is a fantastic revisionist Western. So... that is an interesting idea all alone. Then the fact that Dave Filoni is now going to be doing a live-action film, and it's going to be one that is going to, is basically culminating all of those era of film, Disney Plus shows. So it'll be Mandalorian, Ahsoka to a certain extent, and of course Book of Boba Fett, all that sort of time period before, of course, course, The Force Awakens. So they're going to do something there that'll culminate everything together. And I think Thrawn will have a big part to play there. Now, of course, we'll get to that in a sec. The other one they're talking about is, of course, something post Rise of Skywalker, set 15 years after. And apparently this is one, I guess, that Damon Lindelof was working on. And this is about the New Jedi Order. So I'm guessing it's going to be called Star Wars and the New Jedi Order. And it is the idea that 15 years hence, basically Rey is making her own Jedi Order. To me, yeah, okay, that's cool enough. Cool enough idea, and the idea that she's going to continue the Order somehow. It's got to go on. And at the end of the day, it would have gone on under new management anyway down the line. And I'm talking about, of course, it being a sequel. There's undoubtedly always going to be a sequel. Whether that was going to be considered episode 10, who knows? I think at the end of the day, they're going to have to bite the bullet and just make it episode 10. That's my thoughts. Now, those are three films that have been announced, right, folks? They've announced a lot of stuff. They even announced a Taika Waititi movie that just doesn't seem to be happening at all. Okay? Again, another one, chuck it on the shelf. That must be a hell of a shelf. Well, the weight of that shelf must be falling soon. Who knows? But, look, folks, at the end of the day, let's just hope we can get back Star Wars to the big screen. We had a great trailer with, of course, Ray Stevenson rocking up in the Ahsoka trailer. Mary Elizabeth Winstead in there as Hera. Yes, you see the ghost in it. We get to see all that sort of stuff. And, of course, Rosario Dawson as, of course, Ahsoka Tano. Yeah, it looks good. I'll say that much. It looks fantastic. If you're into Rebels, it'll be great. The other one, of course, being, straight up is, of course, Skeleton Crew. And I'm going to say, the idea of just getting back to the adventure of Star Wars is a freaking smart move. And no Jedi, no, you know, all that crap. Just a good, rip-roaring sci-fi adventure. I think it's sorely missing. And sorely missing from a lot of different stuff. I mean, Star Trek have kind of done that a little bit with the JJ Star Trek stuff to a certain extent. It's not exactly what I call Star Trek, but certainly interesting, and it's good to see Star Wars going up that way. If particularly Jude Law is interesting, so folks, that's what I'll say. And the Acolyte sounds like it'll deliver. Carrie-Anne Moss being involved in that, hey mate, I tell you what, that's gonna be good. And the idea that it's in this new time period, this High Republic, I haven't had a lot to do with the High Republic stuff. Kind of bought one of the books, I read a little bit into it, and yeah, it was all right. It just didn't catch the sort of energy that I like in a story, I guess. You know, it's not the time period that I like. I don't really like the height of the Republic. You know, I like the times when it's, not the height. Why? Because there's more drama, more intrigue, more greed. Because they're at pinnacle there. So it's going to be obviously a story more about Sith, stuff like that too. So, but anyway, that's enough of Star Wars, folks. Look, three films have been announced. I dare say one or two of them will be shelved. They always seem to be with Lucasfilm. But let's just hope this James Mangold one gets going, because it looks like his Indiana Jones movie will be interesting.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullet Cafe as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia. All the detail, the nitty-gritty of the films we are celebrating.
All right, tonight we're chatting about, of course, Mario Brothers, or Super Mario Brothers dot film. Because that's what it is. It literally says that on the case. This ain't no game. Super Mario Brothers dot. So, there was another movie, actually, folks, before this. It was Super Mario Brothers, The Great Mission to Rescue Princess Peach. And, of course, there's a new one, the 2023 animated film, The Super Mario Brothers Movie. Interesting. But, of course, this one is also known as Super Mario Brothers the Movie. It's a 1993 fantasy adventure, and of course, based on Nintendo's Mario games, and it's, of course, full feature length, and, of course, has a great cast, which we're getting into very, very soon. It was directed by a husband and wife team of these directors, Rocky Morton, and, of course, Annabelle Jankel. It was a product that was basically put out, written by Parker Bennett, Terry Runty, and, of course, Ed Solomon. It was brought out by Buena Vista and Hollywood Pictures. Now, what's interesting is having Mario played by Bob Hoskins in this is great. I mean, obviously, we've seen him in
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Fantastic in that as well. Luigi Mario, played by, of course, John Leguizamo, who just loves to work in these sorts of genres. Obviously, he was involved in Spawn as well, which is an adaptation of a comic. Not too far off this sort of idea, too. Samantha Mathis plays Princess Daisy in this as well. And, of course, we've got King Koopa, played by, of course, the late, great Dennis Hopper, who was always an eccentric in these kinds of films. And I tell you what, folks, really is interesting in this one. He's playing it up, but it's that sort of heading into that Waterworld sort of ground, if you know what I mean. Definitely interesting. So this is something the producer, Roland Joff, was trying to put out and, of course, get the rights from Nintendo for Mario. And what's interesting, he was given free creative license by Nintendo to do pretty much what they wanted to do. The idea was to do something similar to The Wizard of Oz and Ghostbusters. Interesting idea. Nonetheless, it's a different beast all itself. It's got things from fairy tales to, of course, American culture itself. And, of course, it is got, a flavor of the 90s to it, which, you know, is unmistakable without going into it too deeply so far. If you know the games, you'll know that exactly the sort of premise that we've got with these guys. And, of course, they're plumbers based out, of course, of New York. And this is basically their little adventure that they go through. Screenplay, of course, was based on the Mario game itself, produced by Jake Eberts and Roland Joff. Now, the main cast, of course, we've talked about a few of them. We've also got Fisher Stevens, Fiona Shaw, and Richard Edison as well. Cinematography by the legendary Australian cinematographer Dean Semler worked on this one. I mean, legend. Mark Goldblatt edited this film, and, of course, music was by Alan Silvestri, and it's got quite a fun little score to it. No doubt was interesting as well. Production companies on this one were Synergy, Allied Filmmakers, Leitmotif, and, of course, Hollywood Pictures. It was put out worldwide by, of course, Buena Vista Pictures Distribution, Entertainment Film Distributors, also in the UK. It came out on May 28th, 1993. Now, I can actually even remember when it first came out. It was interesting because it was all over the magazines, the papers. All of us kids were playing the games. We were playing Super Mario World on, at the time, the Super Nintendo, which was just huge. I mean, Super Nintendo was everywhere. And what's interesting about this one, too, the budget was $42 million, roughly, or could be closer to $48 million. And the box office was just shy of that at $38.9 million. So it almost made all of its money back. But let's just face it, folks, this is known as a bit of a turkey, a bit of a box office bomb. All right, didn't do quite what it needed to do. Now, it's got a very, very basic premise, which we're going to go into here. So at the start of the movie, we get this flashback to basically 65 million years ago when the Earth was hit by a meteorite. And basically split the Earth itself or the universe itself into two dimensions, two parallel universes. So you got these two worlds basically at the same time coexisting. And of course, evolution takes place. So as we, the human race, evolve from basically apes, from here we also have the race of the Koopas, in this case the other dimension, where we get to see humans or human-like creatures coming from, of course, dinosaurs. So from here, they actually found a city there called Dinohattan. It's a humanoid race. But in 1973, a large egg and a rock were then taken and left in front of an orphanage. This is a Catholic orphanage. And from there, out hatches a human baby. We fast forward two decades later. We've got Mario and Luigi Mario working in Brooklyn as plumbers. And, of course, they're just about out of business because they've got the mafia. I mean, the head of it, the mafioso, Tony Scapelli, runs a construction company trying to take on everything around it, plus, of course, all the plumbing jobs they're trying to do. In amongst this, Daisy comes into the picture and meets Luigi. She is a New York University archaeology student, and from here she's excavating dinosaur bones in and around a construction site at Brooklyn Bridge. This is where they see Scapelli's men coming in, and basically what they're trying to do, they're trying to sabotage it so they can get back to business and, of course, try and bust the pipes open to basically flood the area. From here, Mario and Luigi actually fix it, They go down, do the plumbing job, and fix everything. But there's two henchmen hot on the chase. These two come from, of course, Cooper. They're cousins of King Cooper. They're known as Iggy and Spike. Of course, they come from the other dimension. And they set out to kidnap Daisy. And, of course, from here, the two brothers decide to, of course, save her life, pursuing them into, of course, Dino Hatton. Now, here's the interesting thing. We get to see Brooklyn. We get to see what it's like for, of course, the life of these two plumbers in and around suburban Brooklyn. And then, of course, they jump through into this new Dino Hatton. And, of course, it's a piss take, basically, of the kind of world that we all lived in the 90s in that area. From here, Daisy finds out that she's actually descended from the dinosaurs and is the princess of that whole area. Her dad was basically overthrown by King Cooper. And, her, of course, her mother, the queen, left her at the orphanage in Brooklyn. From here, Iggy and Spike see that they meant to get a Daisy's necklace, which has a rock on it. And this is a fragment of the original meteorite that was basically shot into the earth. The King Cooper needs this to merge the worlds together, right? By doing this, he's able to rule both worlds and basically, you know, do what he needs to do. But, of course, along the lines, we get to see some great, interesting characters. One of them being Toad, who's actually a guitarist in this. And it's quite fun because he's kind of got that whole hairstyle in the 90s and stuff like that too. And, of course, he's devolved instead of evolved into a Goomba, which is basically a semi-humanoid dinosaur. So basically, it's a huge humanoid body with a little dinosaur head. It's quite hilarious. It's funny. It's one of the big things we remember from watching the movie. Cooper's girlfriend, Lena, also obtains a rock from here. But, of course, she dies trying to bring the worlds together. The worlds then, of course, separate again. Mario, Luigi, and, of course, then, of course, Daisy take the fragment from the meteorite, and Cooper pursues them afterwards. Of course, from here, it is a hot chase to get through them to, of course, they save the day and find their way back to Brooklyn. What a movie, folks. Interesting idea to do it live action like that. I mean, it was even ballsy for the time. Could you do Mario as a live action thing? It's not the kind of thing you would think of when you play the game. Would you want to turn that? And how do you turn that into a story? So they're pretty brave doing that, I think. And that's what makes it an interesting movie. Just from that alone. So we're going to talk about a little. So let's get into the cast, folks. So we got Bob Hoskins as Mario. Mario pretty much suits it straight away. He was a big lad. Obviously, he has the build and stuff like that. And once you slap that mustache on him, Bob Hoskins, you know, looked the part. Now, from all accounts, as I said earlier, he wasn't real fond of his experience making it. He thought it was a low point in his career. But you know what? I'm quite fond of him in the role. He takes it seriously. Like anything, he's a professional. He got into it, and apparently, nice guy. John Leguizamo is Luigi Mario. Now, John actually loves the movie. If you watch the behind the scenes, which you get in the Super Mario Brothers Blu-ray, you actually get to see this feature. It's the Ain't No Video Game, 60-minute documentary, and it's a new one. You get to see basically what it all looks like, all that sort of stuff. But, of course, he praises the fact that, you know, this is something that, you know, he really enjoyed making. And, of course, liked playing Luigi Mario. But one of the great things about this, too, is that he's been quite vocal about the fact that they got things right on this one, too. And, of course, they got the voices of the characters down pat. And, of course, you know, it was the right kind of people playing the roles when it comes down to, you know, Leguizamo inhabits that role so well. And plays off Bob Hoskins really, really well. I think if you do a live action with the current cast they've got in that that film, it just wouldn't work. This one works, you know, like it. The actual roles, not only physically, are fantastic, but just the way they're playing the actual characters too, the vocal, everything, the actions, you know, everything is down pat perfect as far as I see it. Dennis Hopper is King Cooper. Dennis Hopper's doing Dennis Hopper, folks. That's what Dennis Hopper did back then, the late, great Dennis Hopper. This is right up there with, of course, his work on, of course, Waterworld. That's the kind of villain you're getting here, folks. This paid the bills for him, pretty much. Samantha Mathis is Princess Daisy and, of course, the Queen. She's really good. Always been interesting in everything that she does. But I think in this one, too,
you know, she plays off particularly John Leguizamo quite well. Fisher Stevens as Iggy Cooper, and of course, Richard Edson as Spike Cooper. Now, these two are fantastic. Of course, before they get their brain transplant halfway through it and become basically cosmonauts or rocket scientists, they're fantastic. I mean, they're again, the butt of a lot of the jokes, and they're funny. But I think those two together, they must have had a ball making this too. Fiona Shaw playing Lena, really good. It's kind of like the, of course, the right-hand henchwoman, whatever you want to call it, to, of course, King Cooper. She does really well. I think in this one too, she gets enough scenes where she can sort of chew up the scenery and really show off being a villainess in it as well too. Mojo Nixon as Toad, pretty good. I mean, he doesn't get a lot of work, but it's quite good. From here, we've got, who else? We've got Francesca P. Roberts as Big Bertha. Gianni Russo as Anthony Scapelli. Really playing it up as, obviously, the mafioso. And it works. Not much you can say other than that. Don Lake as Sergeant Simon. But here's the great one, and an interesting one. Lance Henriksen as the King. I mean, that's just great. Getting Lance Henriksen in a role like this, why not? He always delivers, and it always does something interesting, which I like. Frank Welker, Megatron.
What are you doing here, Prime?
Yes. Yoshi and the Goombas. Voice comes from, of course, the one, the great Frank Welker. And, of course, the narrator is none other than Dan Castellaneta. Yeah, that's right. There you go. So, this is something that's been in a lot of production history when it comes down to, like, this is a long one. So the idea of Super Mario had been around and put forward to Roland Joff for a while, of course, script meetings, all that sort of stuff, while he had his company Lightmotive too. And, of course, from here we got him going to Nintendo, of course, and, of course, but along with the idea of making this, you know, the fact that they thought, well, why not? Let's just do it. And from what the documentaries said too, they weren't really concerned about what the movie was, so long as it gave notice to, of course, the games. So, which is interesting, you know, at the end of the day, you know, to actually do that as well. And, of course, it went through a number of different scripts and, of course, rewrites till it got to what it was too. What's interesting about this too, the directors from here, you really had an idea of bringing about, obviously, I think, fun performances, and they did quite well with this universe, which is, you know, it's cartoony, but there is an earthiness to it as well. So, you know, the film itself took inspiration from films like Die Hard, Mad Max, and Blade Runner. But, of course, they went for a darker tone because at the time, 89 and 90, we had Batman, which was a huge success for Warner Brothers, and, of course, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was quite dark, you know. Again, they weren't trying to do, as the producer says, this wasn't Snow White and the Seven Dinosaurs. Which they're trying to do. Now, looking at some of the casting that they were going to try and do originally, Danny DeVito was offered the role of Mario at one stage. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Michael Keaton were also approached to play Cooper, but all turned it down. Tom Hanks was considered for Luigi at one stage. And, of course, eventually it fell to Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo. Hoskins didn't like the script and, of course, didn't want to do another kids' movie. He says, I'd done Roger Rabbit, I'd done Hook. I didn't want it to become like Dick Van Dyke. And, of course, he wondered how he would prepare for the role. I'm the right shape, I've got a mustache. I worked as a plumber's apprentice for about 3 weeks and set the plumber's boots on fire with a blowtorch. Interesting quote, right? Yeah, yeah. But, of course, as the co-director says, Bob was a no-brainer. Unabashed, shameless physical typecasting. Bob was brilliant at assuming the character in a slightly amplified way that would keep his supposed subsequent game iteration. You know, it's interesting. They really got that down. It was he really did inhabit that sort of feel too. From here, of course, we've got you know, we've got the likes of course Leguizamo coming in to play the role of Luigi. And I think it worked off Bob Hoskins quite well. Those two seems to have a natural chemistry on screen as brothers, you know, kind of like, you know, master and apprentice almost, if you like. Well, I mean, plumber's apprentice, I guess. So the film, several weeks into the shoot, Disney purchased the distribution rights to the movie, which made it interesting too. Of course, you got somebody like Disney behind that. Of course, Buena Vista at the time would have been huge. So main photography started on May 6, 1992 and then finished in July 27, 1992, which is interesting. You know, that's not that long really when you think about it. You know, May to July, that's 3 months shooting. So interesting. Production design was done by, of course, Blade Runner's own David Snyder. And, of course, decided turning Mushroom Kingdom into this live-action setting of Dino Hatton. You know, there's echoes of kind of Blade Runner or a commercial Blade Runner, if you like, in the way it was done, too. It's interesting. Patrick Tatopoulos, of course, known better for, of course, Stargate and many other films, of course, had to battle against Jurassic Park when it came to, of course, bringing this dinosaur designs together, of course. And took inspiration from Beetlejuice for some of the designs there, too. And again, interesting too. From this too, they had special effects work they had to do, things like, the, of course, the interdimensional merge that was done and inspired by, of course, Star Trek and the transporter idea as well. So how did this film fare, folks? Well, at the end of the day, the film grossed, as we said, almost close to its budget at final box office. Still not known as a great film by many, but you know what? I like it. I think it's fantastic. So, a certain tomato site gave it 28%. Yeah, well, that's you. But, of course, when we look at LA Times and some of the others too, you know, it's a movie split in two. It said, wildly accomplished on one level and wildly deficient on another. And, of course, you know, others praised it as well. And, of course, it got down to Bob Hoskins really being, you know, I think, great in the role. And again, a lot of the reviewers like the fact that, you know, he's a no-brainer. He can actually deliver the comedy without even breaking a sweat, which is interesting. So the movie came out on VHS in 1994 and on DVD in 2003 and a re-release in 2010. Of course, the quality wasn't that great from more reports. Out here in Australia, we have an edition that came out, but very hard to find. This copy I've got, I actually got from the United States. So this took a couple of years after this. This came out in 2014, this release that I have, which is basically a Blu-ray disc on a black cover. And it's got the basic features too. It's got the press kit, storyboard galleries, and of course behind the scenes shots, original electronic press kit, and of course a making of, and the brand new one, this Ain't No Video Game, which is a 60-minute feature, and worth it too. If you're a fan of the film, definitely go and check it out too. So let's look at the legacy here, which is, you know, something that's interesting, no doubt where you go with this too. Hoskins was asked, what's the worst thing he ever did? He says, Super Mario Bros. It was a fucking nightmare. His own words. There you go. You need you say any more. Leguizamo, of course, he said, he's glad that people appreciate the movie. It was the first. Nobody had ever had done it before. I'm proud of the movie in retrospect. Of course, then Hopper disparaged the production. He said it was a nightmare. Very honestly, that movie, it was a husband and wife directing team who were both control freaks and wouldn't talk before they made decisions. Yeah, I could see the issue there too. and even some of the co-directors here are coming on and saying too that there was a harrowing experience. And so there you go. Okay, probably not the best... the best experience, I guess, when you hear that too. So there was a sequel webcomic which came out. Fanside editors by the name of Stephen Applebaum and Ryan Hoss teamed with one of the film's original screenwriters and, of course, made a fan fiction webcomic sequel. So there you go. There's something out you go and check out. And there's an extended cut that was put out too, apparently. Semi-official restoration of the film. Then, of course, you got the soundtrack, folks. Soundtrack, yes, that's right. And that came out in 1993, May 10. And, of course, there's some hits on that one too that you'll see. A couple of songs you'll probably know as well. And, of course, Walk the Dinosaur. performed by George Clinton and the Goombas. There you go. But that's the one I remember the most from, of course, the movie. It was all over the rage out here in Australia, which is interesting too. Of course, a new theatrical film has been in the works since 2014 and is now released. It's out there now. I'll probably see it sometime soon. I do like Nintendo stuff, so definitely will check it out. But I prefer this. This is the movie, to me, that is Super Mario Brothers the movie. It's not perfect. It's certainly not the greatest film out there, but it's one that, I think carries the name of Mario quite well. Super Mario Brothers the movie gets a 3.5 out of 5 here, of course, on the Lethal Mullet podcast.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Where's the mullet? Where is he? He's coming in by chopper again.
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, get out of mine, there you go.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about Deep Thought. And Deep Thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. But we are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.